You're tuned in to the Coach Onam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. 2 weekends ago, 17-year-old Nabra Hassanan was assaulted, abducted, and murdered in Sterling, Virginia. A Muslim teen, she was walking from IHOP to her mosque with a group of her friends. The police are characterizing the attack as a road rage incident, but many local Muslims aren't convinced that Islamophobia was not involved, especially since Nabra was wearing a hijab at the time. Members of the Northern Virginia Muslim community join us now to discuss how Nabra's death has affected that community and offer some glimpses into Muslim life in the region. Joining me in studio first is Carmel Delchat. She is a news producer here at WAMU 88.5. Carmel, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Aya Saeed is a Harvard Law School student who grew up in Fairfax County. She's the organizer of Deeply Rooted Retreat for Black Muslim Youth for the Muslim Wellness Foundation. Aya Saeed, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
And Joshua Salam is chaplain of the Adams Center. Joshua Salam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Eid Mubarak to you all.
Thank you so much.
And to everyone else celebrating today. You can join this conversation by calling 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org, shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show, or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Ask a question or make a comment there. Are you a Muslim? How has Nabra's death affected you? 800-433-8850. Carmel, you went to last week's vigil. What was that experience like, and what are your impressions of the community's response? Before you respond, let's hear a little bit about what it sounded like.
When I say nuh, y'all say bruh. Nuh,
bruh.
Nuh,
bruh.
When I say nuh, y'all say bruh. Nuh,
bruh.
Nuh,
bruh.
When I say nuh, y'all say bruh. Nuh,
bruh.
Sounded like a rally.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of emotions there across religious lines. I mean, I saw people from churches that were nearby to the Adams Center. I saw people from synagogues. Obviously, there's a lot of Muslim Americans there as well. So I think it was a very emotional vigil, as you can imagine. There's a lot of tears, especially when the spoken word artist and rapper got up to sort of pay his homage to Nabra. And I think it was very raw at the time, Joshua, you might agree. It was just, you know, a couple days after everything unfolded and ahead of the Eid, as you can imagine, a few days later, people were sort of unsure of what to think, and it was a good time for them to get together and heal.
People should know that the Adams Center is the acronym for the All Dulles Area Muslim Society. Joshua, as chaplain of the center, what kind of reaction are you seeing from the community there?
Well, it's a lot of mixed reactions. We have a very diverse community, young, old, different ethnicities, and it's very raw because of the climate in America, you know. So anytime this type of incident happens within our community, it runs deep. People feel like that was them. They imagine themselves in that situation, and, you know, any individual can point back to, you know, 5-6 other incidents in the last 2 years where the victim was a Muslim, and sometimes it's a hate crime, sometimes it's not, but it really just triggers all those instances. So even in this case, the police are still investigating what the motive is, and we've asked them to not leave any stone unturned to find out what the motive was, and they haven't determined it yet, but a lot of Muslims feel that it was a hate crime, and that's why we're dealing with that on an emotional level. So we have counselors with those youth and with the community members to try to talk that through, even though the facts of the investigation reveal what they are.
We'll get some more into that later on, but ASIA, this killing sent shockwaves around the country, and there have been vigils for Nabra across the country. You attended one such in New York. What was that like, and how are Muslim communities outside of Virginia reacting to Nabra's death?
I did. I actually attended a vigil in New York City organized by WISE, which is a Muslim women's collective. I think for me it was a shocking and a sobering reminder that everything that happens here has, it echoes across our country and across the world, really. What was really poignant for me, though, above all else, is that it was organized by young women, young people who are trying to carve out spaces from which to heal and to grieve, but also to build and commune with their fellow organizers, which to me was a reminder of who we're building this community for.
Are you raising Muslim teens? How have you been talking to your children about this? 800-433-8850 is the number to call. This question for all of you. I'll start with you, Carmel. There have been reports that hate crimes against Muslims have been on the rise over the past 2 years. These include attacks on people as well as on mosques. How safe do you get the impression Muslim communities feel in the U.S. right now?
Right. According to the FBI, hate crimes are on the rise, and that's something that you can look at. It hasn't been as high as it is right now since 9/11, immediately after 9/11. So there is that sort of worry about institutions, whether or not they're being safe or not. I think that mosques are doing what they can to ensure that their safety. Every mosque I've been to has had extra security measures in place. Even the mosque my father-in-law runs in Florida, they're not allowing teens to stay, past midnight anymore to ensure that just in case something happens, to ensure that everybody is safe in the community. So I think people are looking over their shoulder. I know that there's people taking self-defense classes as well, just to be prepared so that you are as safe as you possibly can be in the event something happens.
Saeed, young people in particular.
Yeah, I think oftentimes when these kinds of attacks happen, it's easy to be desensitized and to sort of numb yourself from the fact that there is this sort of hysteria in our political environment. There's a culture of anti-Muslim bigotry that's really starting to, reigning across our streets. But young people are being impacted by this each and every day, and no longer is it just sort of a sort of distant topic of conversation. It's something that we now feel very deeply in our communities, having a dear sister being lost in our own communities. And I think it's worth talking about the kinds of psychological impacts that this is having on young people, the trauma that they are undergoing, which is why I think me and a host and group of other organizers are now thinking through how to create these alternative spaces for these young people to dream, because for so many of them, this is the only reality that they've really known in the United States.
Joshua Salam, you talked about a number of the things that are taking place at the Adams Center to help people, Muslims in general and young people in particular, cope. But some people are pointing to the anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant rhetoric that our president, Donald Trump, employed as a candidate and now as president. How much effect do you think that Trump's remarks have had in this latest crop of Islamophobic attacks? And is there any evidence of that?
I don't know. I think us at a local level, we have a very different perspective than people who have been making comments from different parts of the country and even different parts of Virginia, because we are in touch with the family. We're in touch with the youth that were there that evening. And so when Ayabrick brings up trauma, that's the first thing that we're dealing with right now, is just the trauma of those youth, any nightmares that they may be having, the fears that they may have in their own neighborhood. And so that's our main focus. We haven't really been addressing it on a national level, how this connects to something the president said or this or that.
Heard anything about that in your reporting of this at all, Carmel?
Absolutely. I think it's important to remember that these were young teenagers who were going out for a very routine thing, like going out for your pre-dawn meal. We've all done it, I think. And it seems like just a normal, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday night. And to have something like this happen at the end, I agree that there's a lot of trauma there, and I think it'll stay with them forever.
There's been a lot of criticism from the members of the Muslim community about the decision to not approach this as a hate crime. We got an email from Dule Gango, who says, first of all, please convey my condolences to all of her family and friends. My question is, why did you frame this conversation as the brutal death of a local Muslim girl instead of just the brutal death of a local innocent girl? Is there evidence that shows that the crime is related to her religion? Saeed, as a law student, do you have any insight into the issue of this being a hate crime? What is your understanding of what constitutes a hate crime?
Sure. So there is a federal hate crime statute, but that's pretty inconsequential here because the federal government can't prosecute, it doesn't have the capacity to prosecute every case. So what's really at hand is the Virginia Commonwealth's statute, which is a three-pronged hate crime statute that generally states that any illegal crime or illegal act purported upon a person or a property with the intent of inciting fear on a particular group because of that group's religion, race, ethnic origin, its country of origin, etc., is deemed a hate crime. Now, as you can imagine, and I want to underscore, it's virtually impossible to really prove one's intent in acts like these. However, what's I think important to signal out is that in Virginia, there's a third prong here that provides law enforcement officials with some discretion in figuring out what kind of intent was at play here that I think is unique when comparing it to other states. And I think in this instance in particular, the evidence suggests that while there was road rage, that may have incited Mr. Torres to get out of the car, there's something to be said about there being something else at play to induce him to then carry out the alleged sexual assault and murder of Nabra. And this isn't an isolated incident. I mean, I think, this Ramadan alone, we've seen incidents of men getting stabbed out of Portland protecting a young black Muslim woman. We've seen a black Muslim woman in Minnesota getting attacked, once again, because of the fact that she was wearing hijab. And so I think the hate crime statute is important not only as a prosecutorial tool, but also as a political symbolic gesture indicating the kind of violence that we won't tolerate in this country. And I think it's sort of a responsibility onto us and our public servants to really dig into and see and tease out some of the factors that could have been at play to escalate the crime in the way that it escalated.
Obviously, we don't have all the evidence of yet, but are you leaning towards wanting this prosecuted as a hate crime?
I think we should investigate it as a hate crime, most definitely. I think we don't have enough evidence to suggest that it was or it wasn't. It would be a disservice, I think, to the community to not prosecute it as such, in large part because I think there's a general hysteria and there's a fear amongst some of the most vulnerable communities in our country right now. And to ignore that, I think, would be a disservice and an unfair and I think a bit ludicrous to not pay homage to the fact that there are young people that are afraid to walk outside in our streets right now.
In case you're just joining us, that's the voice of A.S. Saeed. She's a Harvard Law School student who grew up in Fairfax County. She's the organizer of Deeply Rooted Retreat for Black Muslim Youth for the Muslim Wellness Foundation. She is joined in studio by Carmel Delshed, who is a news producer at WAMU 88.5, and Joshua Salam, who is the chaplain for the Adams Center. We're discussing the recent beating, abduction, and murder of a teenager in Northern Virginia and trying to find what your responses to it are. You can call us at 800-433-8850. Are you concerned about the uptick in attacks on Muslims in the U.S. and around the world? Joshua Salam, you have indicated that you want the authorities in Fairfax to keep their options open. Have you received any response from them to that effect?
The response that we've received is that they are going to investigate fully and not leave anything. They're going to check emails. They're going to investigate friends and families, and it's going to be a very thorough and long investigation. And as soon as any evidence pokes his head out that there was a bit of information or evidence to show that this was a hate crime, they're going to address it as such. So I know with law enforcement and a lot of minority communities, there's distrust with the whole, Black Lives Matter movement and other legal things in the United States of America. But again, we're just dealing with it on a local level. And our message with the Fairfax County Police and the Loudoun County Police, we have a long-term, open, and close relationship where they come to our location, they talk, we go to their offices and we talk. And it's been going on for, over 10 years. So we know the police chief, he knows our imam. So there's a lot of trust involved. And we sat with him and met with him and his PR people, and they looked us in the eye and said, you know what, we're going to investigate this fully. We're investigated aggressively. And if we find any evidence of a hate crime, trust us. That's the direction that we're going to go. So that's the communication that's happened between us and law enforcement.
Carmel, what are the people that you've been speaking with in your reporting saying about the question of whether or not they see this as a hate crime?
I think it's a bit divided. There are some people who are saying, the decision to go after this as more of a road rage incident happened rather quickly. And I think to them, it doesn't quite pass the smell test. Road rage might mean running somebody off the road, doing a particular gesture. And they're sort of wondering, how does that lead to beating somebody to death with a bat and then dumping their body into a pond. And speaking with the Fairfax County Police Chief, he did say, you know, there's absolutely nothing to say that we are not going to go after this as a hate crime. It just, at the moment, we don't have any evidence pointing that way, but it is an active investigation, so that might change.
We got an email from Amy Shaw in Reston, who says, our daughter also attends South Lakes, but didn't know Nabra personally. We attended the funeral at the Adams Center, plus the vigil at Lake Ann. I was absolutely amazed by the generosity and warmth of the Adams community. Each person I met was welcoming and spent time to explain what was happening. The vigil was arranged by South Lakes Muslim Students Association, and it was amazingly hopeful and a true celebration of Nabra's life and gift to our community as a whole. While our sorrow is so deep, we are buoyed by the love, compassion, generosity, and desire to spread Nabra's spark throughout the world. We left the vigil filled with hope because of Nabra's example of how to live. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation and invite your calls at 800-433-8850. What do you think people should know about Northern Virginia's Muslim communities? 800-433-8850. You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show, email to kojo@wamu.org, or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. I'm Kojo Namdi.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Go to WAMU.org/lift every voice to learn the stories of these incredible African-American changemakers and to hear special interviews spotlighting those who have impacted the arts, sciences, sports, and activism. Go to WAMU.org/lift every voice.
Welcome back. We're calling this Remembering Nabra, Northern Virginia's Muslim Community. We reflect on a local loss during Ramadan. We're talking with Carmel Del Shad. She's a news producer here at WAMU 88.5. Aya Saeed is a Harvard Law School student who grew up in Fairfax County. She's the organizer of Deeply Rooted Retreat for Black Muslim Youth for the Muslim Wellness Foundation. And Joshua Salam is a chaplain at the Adams Center. Joshua Salam, it has been reported that the accused killer, Darwin Martinez Torres, is an undocumented immigrant. Has that been a factor in how your community has been discussing this case? And how is the relationship between Muslim and Latino communities in this area?
No, actually. Bless
Excuse
you.
Me.
This, it has not come up in any of our proceedings, in any of our vigils, community talks. It's an individual who committed a heinous act, and I think especially the Muslim community is very sensitive to that, because we also suffer the stereotyping that comes from, you know, once a Muslim decides to do something heinous, of your whole community being grouped in. So I think that's probably why the community hasn't even brought up his ethnicity or anything like that in any of our functions. It's the fact that there was a brutal murder, and how are we going to recover, and where are we going to go from it right now? That's been our focus.
Later in the broadcast, we'll be talking with George Escobar, Senior Director of Health and Human Services at CASA, an immigrant advocacy group. Feel free to join us for that conversation if you'd like to.
Okay.
Carmel, there was an incident in Chapel Hill in 2015 where three Muslim college students were shot and killed. In that incident, the police determined that the killer's motivation was a parking dispute and said that it was not a hate crime, but many people thought that it was. How has the memory of incidents like that affected reactions in the community now?
I think it was quite telling that the brother of one of the victims, Faris Barakat, drove up from North Carolina to Virginia to be there for the funeral and the vigil and the community events surrounding Nabra's death. To him, it was also it reminded him of what happened to his brother and his sisters-in-law, in the sense that that parking dispute, could that be seen as sort of a very similar thing to this road rage incident, what police are calling a road rage incident? And I believe he held a couple of events with the youth that were there and the wider youth community in the Northern Virginia Muslim community to say, look, I've been through this. It's okay to grieve. you know, this is not somebody telling you this from a textbook. It's somebody telling you this from personal experience. So I think it does echo of that time a few years ago where, you know, people that are like every other normal Muslim husband and wife, younger couple, that were living in their home and were attacked by somebody.
We hear often about this disconnect between minority communities and law enforcement, the Muslim community being no exception. But on the one hand, Joshua Salam, you talk about how the Adams Center has developed a relationship with the Fairfax County Police. On the other hand, ISA, you talk about how some young people might be reluctant to interact with the police. Why is that?
I mean, the police, I think, naturally are an extension of political power. And so function symbolically sort of representative of the government. I mean, they are in place to enforce laws. And unfortunately, we live in a political moment right now wherein a lot of these laws are discriminatory in nature. There are, you know, political rallies and political movements to pass bills that are going to not only marginalize our youth, but marginalize thinking and imagination in a way that I think does a disservice to our young people. And so I think naturally there is a distrust of any representative of the state, the police being one of many representations. And I think it does beg the question of where we feel safe. I mean, you know, many young people my age are reluctant to call the police when things go awry in their neighborhoods, not only because of the fact that they worry that that there's going to be some sort of retaliation, but also because of a very serious and very real anti-Black and anti-Muslim sentiment that has plagued police forces across the country.
Joshua Salam, you mentioned this earlier, but tell us about some of the programming the Adams Center has for young people.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's a lot there. Thank God.
Give us a few.
We have programming for early childhood development. We have a preschool program that's a full-time program. We have programs for young people from the ages of 12 to 18 where there's camps that they go on, there's workshops, there's field trips that they do regularly. We have educational programs for K through 6, and then we have educational programs for 7th through 12th grade on the weekends. We have a full-time memorization program for the Holy Book of the Quran that happens on a daily basis. So there's you have a scouting program, one of the largest scouting programs in our area with over 100 male scouts and boy scouts and over 100 girl scouts as well. So it's a lot of things happening at the Adams Center all seven days of the week.
Tell us a little more about the Adams Center itself and how Northern Virginia came to have one of the country's largest mosques.
Well, just like any religious institution begins, it starts with a few families, right? There's a few families that came together in the early 80s to try to keep an identity with their families and their youth. And they began praying together and having classes together on the weekend, and it just kind of grew. And it's a lot of factors that went into that. One, Northern Virginia was booming as well, you know, so the farms were turning into these industrialized areas with, you know, shopping centers and things like that. It became like the, Silicon Valley on the East Coast, you know, IT jobs, everybody was funneling in. Now, that coupled with some key personalities, you know, our imam has a very charismatic character, very knowledgeable. So those type of, I think things kind of brought it all together and made it a very huge, booming community from the 90s and into the early 2000s. And so we have 6 locations now, full-time locations. And on Fridays, we have 11 locations that we open up for Friday prayer.
Carmel, Aya talked earlier about the distrust of police among both Black and Muslim youth. Those two categories come together in some respects because Nabra Hassanan's family is from Egypt and there are Muslims in Northern Virginia from all over the world. Can you talk about the diversity in Northern Virginia's Muslim community?
Right. I think it's very apparent just walking around in Northern Virginia that there's people from all over the Muslim world. There's, you know, Egypt, there's Sudan, there's Saudi Arabia, there's other countries. So there is a bit of that distrust, I would say, especially because some of the countries where people are coming to the U.S. from, the police are not really who you want to go to in order to feel security. Sometimes you would want to avoid that. So for for that distrust, I would say it's not just, you know, what they're seeing here in the U.S., but it's also what they're escaping from in many cases.
Nabra's family is Nubian Egyptian. And during the vigil, her cousin reminded the crowd that she was a black Muslim woman. Who are Nubians? And are they generally considered black? And does that change anything about this case?
Sure. So I myself actually am Nubian as well, though Nubian on Sudanese side, and Nabra's family is Nubian. Nabra itself is actually a Nubian name, meaning gold. And so a lot of elders like to say that we lost a gem given Nabra's death, which is, I think, very real and very salient. I think ethnicity is a very complicated topic of conversation because there are a multiplicity of blackness that exists all over the world that we try to fit in a very narrow binary in the United States. Are you black or are you white? I think generally, phenotypically, most Nubians do consider themselves to be white. But according to the U.S. Census, I think most Nubians coming from Egypt anyways are considered Caucasian still, though there is a very vibrant movement to change that now because of the sort of complicated relationship between their ethnic Nubian identity and their national Egyptian identity, which exists today. But I do want to emphasize that in New York, there was a Black Lives Matter protester who attended and spoke on behalf of Nabra, and we saw BLM be a major force on behalf of Nabra in many of the vigils all across the country, which I think speaks to how open our young people are in opening up these kinds of conversations and building coalitions across multiple identities.
So who is the constituency for Deeply Rooted Retreat for Black Muslim Youth?
So our focus is on young black Muslims, and our belief is that to build the next cohort of social justice activists and warriors, that one needs to create spaces for our young people from which to heal and reflect and grow from a place of mental health and safety. And so our goal here is to tackle both the very real racial, institutionalized racism that exists in the United States that dehumanizes our young people, while also coming to terms with the anti-Islamic sentiments that is so pervasive in our political system. So we invite young millennials on a retreat. We also invite a series of educators and healers and facilitators and artists, all black, all Muslim, on the retreat to facilitate a series of workshops for our young people. And at the core of what we're doing here is providing and curating a safe space for our young people to start dreaming up of what an alternative to this political moment looks like, and providing a space from which they can really start to unpack some of that very real trauma that they're undergoing both here and nationally and abroad.
That and another year of law school ahead of you.
One more. We're almost there.
Joshua Salam, this is Eid, which marks the end of the month of Ramadan. What is Eid and how is it traditionally celebrated?
Yeah, Eid is a celebration time, a holiday at two times on the Muslim calendar. One is after the month of Ramadan, and one is during the month of Dhul Hijj after the pilgrimage to Mecca. And so we celebrate just as anybody else would celebrate with families coming together to eat and talk and go out and have fun and exchanging gifts. And so Muslims are very happy that we have these holidays. We like to engage our neighbors as well during these holidays. And for Ramadan, you know, it's a special time because after this month of fasting, it's a transition and with hopefully learning lessons from Ramadan, as we also have learned lessons from this whole situation. So it was the mood was a little bit different during this Eid. It was, we were celebrating and mourning at the same time. And so the talks and the Eid sermons were very somber.
Yes, I did.
Can I just add one thing really quickly? I think for many of us in Northern Virginia, most of us are first-generation Americans. Some of us come from working-class families. And it's during Ramadan and Eid that we can really start to carve out spaces that start feeling like home. You know, those late-night runs to IHOP and McDonald's after prayer with our friends who are also coming from all over the world. These are really such special and very dear moments to us. So for the crime and for this incident to have happened in this moment really is quite... traumatic, I think, for a lot of young people who are carving out spaces that are starting to feel like home for the first time, really, in forever. And so I really just want to underscore how touching and how deeply felt this incident is to our young people.
Aya Saeed is a Harvard Law School student who grew up in Fairfax County. She's the organizer of Deeply Rooted Retreat for Black Muslim Youth for the Muslim Wellness Foundation. Thank you for joining us. Joshua Salam is the chaplain of the Adams Center. Joshua Salam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Carmel Del Shad is a news reporter at WAMU 88.5. Carmel, I'll be seeing you around.
Definitely.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we will talk with an activist leader of the Latino community about how this incident is playing out there. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.